Yeah, we're in the middle of the test, if you remember. Last time we looked at a pasuk that the Gra has a very beautiful interpretation. Just to review it very quickly without going over all of it. This was Perek Yutes, pasuk Yud Gimel. Bayis v'han nachlas avais. A house and wealth are things you get from your parents, get from your father. Me'ashem isha maskelet. But from God comes a woman of wisdom. Meaning to say, dad cannot buy you a good wife. Obviously, you know, money can get you a shidduch, can get anybody a shidduch, but the goodness of a shidduch does not come from money. And therefore, you can get property from your parents, but it is a gift of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that one gets an isha of haskala. Now again, the word haskala is a word that's used, maskil, different forms of it are used in Mishlei a lot. Now remember that maskil comes from the word seichel, and seichel we sometimes or usually associate with intelligence, but that is not what it refers to in Mishlei. In fact, even the word chachma that we associate with knowledge refers in Mishlei to understanding of good and bad, knowing what Hashem wants me to do with my life. That's what the pasuk says, Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem, the beginning of Chachma is Yiras Hashem. That is Chachma. In fact, another pasuk says, not only is Yiras Hashem the beginning of Chachma, but rather Chachma is Yiras Hashem. That is Chachma. And by the same token, Haskala, enlightenment, refers to the notion of a person understanding what their goals are in life. That is why it was kind of euphemistic in the sense that the movements in the 19th century that continues today, which stress that the Jews should leave yeshivas and they should embrace secular culture and science and wisdom, that was called the Haskalah, right? So Haskalah is normally associated as a negative term, which is too bad. They took a term that referred to true enlightenment and they perverted it that way. The Frum Jews did not call the Haskalah Haskalah. That was the name they gave. Although it's interesting, the Baal HaTanya once said, it was an Hashgacha Pratis that the Misnagdim called the followers of the Baal Shem Tov Hasidim. They called it derogatorily, but it's really a wonderful, beautiful name. He says they could have called them Kofrim, they could have called them Apikorsim, they called them Hasidim. So I hear somebody's a Chassid. That's a bad thing. What's wrong with being a Chassid? Etc. So sometimes the Hashgacha, you know, takes a name that should be bad and makes it good. But Maskilim are a wonderful thing. And therefore, Isha Maskelis does not refer to a bright woman. Although it's good to have a bright woman to run a household and everything else, but it refers to a woman who understands the meaning of life, Yiras Hashem, Midos Tovos, to be mechazek her home in Torah and mitzvos, and to do so with an inner joy, which is, you know, what do they say? Happy wife, happy life. This is an old saying that people say. And the woman is very much an akeres habayis in the sense of setting the mood. Right, that's the big mistake people make when people say, Judaism is discriminatory, men have all of these things and women don't have these things, and that's why there is movements in the modern Orthodox world, now it's called Open Orthodox, which is to the left of modern Orthodox, for women rabbis. It's a very big issue. I mean, I don't know, not that you should be involved in it, but it's a very, very big push. There are women already being ordained as rabbis. Sometimes they call them different titles. They call them Maharat, so they call them Rabba. But they're already beginning to call them rabbi straight and alike. And all of this comes from the idea that chas v'shalom, the Torah is sexist, the Torah is racist, the Torah is exclusionary. But the central insight is that both men and women are equal. They are created in the image of Hashem. But equality does not mean people are the same. If anything, there's a tremendous insult to a woman to say she can have her shleimus only if she puts on tefillin like a man. That would imply that in her role as woman, there is no makom for shleimus. And true shleimus is when each person lives up to the tachlis that they were given in the Bria. And there's no question a woman is called the akeres habayis because the type of mood she sets in the home determines everything. It determines whether her husband will learn, do mitzvahs, it determines how the children will be. If anything, men could complain that we have it, you know, we have much less of a role in the creation of a home. So an Isha Maskelis, and I'm just digressing, the concept of an Isha Maskelis means a woman who understands what the role of an Akeres HaBayis is, and that is a true gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sometimes we're not Zoicha. A person has a Basheret, but a Basheret doesn't mean I deserve it. It's a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that a certain neshama needs a certain tikkun. So that's the simple meaning. Again, the simple meaning of the pasuk is 100% true. That as you know, you can get all sorts of gifts by Yerusha, but this is a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly, in Isha Maskelis. Now the Gra learns, again just to remind you, B'kitzer, that bayis v'hain symbolically have meanings, that bayis refers to mitzvos aseh and mitzvos lo saseh. That is the house that you make on this earth, right? The house, the shelter I create for myself are the mitzvos aseh and the mitzvos lo saseh. And the home, the wealth that I accumulate, is the Torah that I learn. Right? So bayis v'hain is a remez to mitzvos and Torah. And that is nachalas avos in the sense that in the merit of Avraham, we got mitzvos aseh. In the merit of Yitzchak, we got mitzvos lo saseh. I'll explain why. And in the merit of Yaakov, we got the Torah. So the bayis, which is kolel, lo sases, and aseh, is the zchus of Avraham. Avraham and Yitzchak. The hon, which is Torah, is the zchus of Yaakov. Now, may Hashem Isha Maskelis, I'll get in a moment what that means. Now, the reason why, again, forgive me for reviewing quickly, this one, I just want to be sure everyone, some people weren't here. The reason why the mitzvah saseh come in the merit of Avraham is that Avraham represents the mitzvah of loving kindness. Avraham represents chesed. And mitzvah saseh are expressive of the love we have for God. Right? So chesed is the love we show others, the mitzvah saseh are the love we show God, and therefore the mitzvah saseh are connected to Avraham. Yitzchak represents the midah of yira, of fear and reverence for the Almighty, that's called gevura, and therefore that's the mitzvah lo saseh. Right? Now Yaakov represents Torah. We know that Avraham represents gemilas chesed, Yitzchak represents avoda, which is prayer, and Yaakov represents Torah because of the 14 years he spent in the yeshiva of Shem Be'Aver. So therefore, Yaakov is considered to be the koach of Torah. So therefore, the Gra says that bayis and hon we get from the avos. Now, what is Isha Maskelis? So here he says the following idea. Isha, again, this is al pi the Zohar. Isha is a symbolic expression for the godly soul that we have. You know, we have the concept of soul, at least according to Kabbalah, is not a unitary thing. It's not like there's only one soul, but rather, according to Kabbalah, we have five different spiritual entities that are called soul. We have nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, yechida. Five. Nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, yechida. Now, a full explanation we wouldn't be able to go into right now, but basically, just very much bekitzer, the nefesh is what is called the animal soul. That is the life force that keeps my body going. Right? There is a life force, and that's the same as an animal might have. Although, the Svarim say that even the animal soul of a human being is not the same. In other words, it's not the same. It's not the pshat. I have a common animal soul with a dog, but then I have extra stuff. I have extra stuff. I know some. I have extra stuff on top of it. Rather, even the metzias of the animal soul is different. It's a higher level, but it's ultimately an animal soul. That's the nefesh. The ruach is said to be the emotions and feelings that people have. The neshama is the seichel. That's already the intellect that is higher, that connects to Hashem through the seichel. And those are three that are within me. The nefesh, ruach, neshama, often abbreviated as Naran. You'll often see the abbreviation Nun, Resh, Nun. Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama are within me, and it's called Or Pnimi, the inner light. And Chaya Yechida are not really in me, but they surround me. They kind of connect me to Hashem. They're like that which connects. The Chaya, the Yechida, again, these are different levels of connection. So on one hand, we describe the Yechida as almost the outermost that connects me to Hashem. On the other hand, it's also described as the innermost aspect of me, which is uncorruptible. So when we say, now the tefillos don't always use this Kabbalistic terminology, but when it says, Elokai, neshama shenasata bi tahori, the neshama that you gave me is tahor. Although it would have been nicer if it would have said the word yechida that you gave me, but it's really referring to the yechida, meaning to say, there is an aspect of a person's spiritual essence that is not corruptible, no matter what averos you do. And we talk about that as besmirching and making your different levels of your soul filthy and dirty. But that innermost aspect, the yechida, can never be corrupted. There's nothing that can be done to it. It's invincible. And from that yechida comes the power of tshuva. Because that is why tshuva is always possible. Because there is within a person an aspect that is never, never corrupted. Right? Hasidim call it in Yiddish the pintalayit, the little spark of Judaism. But really that's referring to the yechida. Yechida means the singularity, the uniqueness. So the grasa, yeah.
Does Kohen have
extra
layers of souls, or than regular people?
No, as far as everyone has the same. Every Jew has all the five.
Monser has same thing.
No.
And Goy, does how different is it?
A Goy may not have the Chaya of the Yechida. I mean, the Goy also has the image of God. There is a godly soul within a non-Jew as well. But that's a machlokas. The Baal HaTanya actually is very, very rejecting of non-Jews, but other the Rambam is not. The Rambam implies... Well, first of all, again, I mean, I'm mixing apples and oranges. The Rambam Bichlal does not talk about five neshamas. In fact, the Rambam is very emphatic. There's only one soul, but the soul has different faculties. Just like, you know... And the Rambam only describes three faculties. The Rambam describes the... what we call nefesh, ruach, neshama, the biological soul, the emotional, and the intellectual. The Rambam does not talk about the mysterious levels of chaya and yechida, which in any event have less. So, based on this, the isha maskelas is referring to the neshama and the higher levels. They are called a beautiful woman. And the Gra says that Torah and mitzvahs were given to us in the merit of our forefathers, not because we deserve them. But if a person truly keeps the Torah and the mitzvot, then Hashem will open up within their heart feelings of love and reverence for Hashem, which goes beyond what they could have earned on their own. Meaning, there's not a direct cause and effect here. If a person does whatever he can do, Hashem will open up from within them recesses of holiness and understanding. That's the Isha Maskelas. That on their own they would not arrive. You know, they give a mashal, they give a story of, must be a modern mashal because it involves an elevator, but this I don't know the origin of it, about a king who constructed a tower of 100 stories, and he said, whoever can climb to the top of the tower, or 1,000 stories, will get to marry my daughter. Right? One of those king marries daughter stories. So most people didn't bother because they had to climb up by the end of the day. Who could climb 1,000 stories in one day? So one fellow said he would try. So he goes up 5, 10, 15, already 15 stories, already a little out of breath, 20, and people are laughing at him because he's already getting tired. He has 980 stories. What's going to be? You know, but he says, I'm going to keep on going. So he goes up, you know, by the 50th or the 60th story. You know, he has 950 left. You know, people laugh at him and say, what an idiot. You know, why are you killing yourself for something? You're going to be a total failure. When he collapses on the 50th landing, the landing turns into an express elevator and takes him all the way to the top. And this is a good mashal because, you know, we look at what Hashem wants us to do in life. And it looks like it's impossible. It looks like we have no way of doing it. So as a result, we don't start. We often think, you know, what's the use of even starting? I'm not going to finish. Whether it's in learning or any type of avodah. But the thing that we don't understand is, if you do the best that you can, at some point HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to carry you. But Hashem is going to carry you only if you do as much as you're capable. Meaning, if the guy goes up to 50 stories, Hashem will carry him the other 950. But if he didn't bother to do the 50, then he's not going to get. If he only did 49 when he could have done 50, nothing's going to happen. So the difference between the one story and not is the 950 stories that you get. The Gra says that's exactly the meaning of the Isha Mesakelis, that Hashem will open up your hearts, that you will understand and connect, and you will find love and reverence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that well up within your heart that you don't even realize. You know, all of you have heard of Rav Shimshon Pinchas, I'm sure. He's quite an old Rav, a very, very great, great man, an American, actually. But he died tragically, he and his whole family, well, not his whole family, but his wife, was nifter with him. They died in a car accident. I think it was Erev Pesach, Mamish. But a lot of his stuff is being published from tape, both in Hebrew and in English. And they're translating a lot of it in English as well, the Shimshon Pinchas. So he tells a story there. He actually gives me the shivers whenever I think about it. Because just that he was really a Baal Avodah, a very inspirational person, always, just a person who was always working on new madregas and avodas Hashem. Very rare. Even among Talmidei Chachamim, it's a bit of a rare attribute that somebody is a Baal Avodah, always striving for higher and higher madregas. So he tells the story that when he was a bachur in Brisk or Mir, I don't know, one of them, he was in both, but I don't know which one it was. So he had a dira with three guys. And it had an attic as well, and a very, very messy attic. And the two guys left for Pesach Ben Hazman, and they didn't bother to tell him, and it was time for Bedikas Chametz. He was the only guy there for a whole big, very big dira. And he was thinking so much about, he had a lot of heterim, he was also going away for Pesach, he could sell the whole thing, he could just do bezika of his drawer, he wasn't mechayev to be baidik der chalak, and certainly the attic, But he said to himself, why should I look for heterim? So he spent the whole night being baidik, the whole night. He was tired from the whole night cleaning the attic. The attic hadn't been cleaned in like 30 years or something. He went through everything. And it was 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and he was really, really dead tired. But it wasn't kedai to go to sleep for an hour, so he decided, all right, I'll go to a Vasikin Minyan. So he goes to a Vasikin Minyan, and then he's telling himself, what's going to happen is I'm going to be so exhausted, I'm not going to stay up for the Seder. But then he noticed that, his davening was great. And then he went to the Seder, it was like the best Seder he ever had. And he was thinking to himself, I don't know what's going on. Maybe it's like I'm on some psychedelic high or something. Sometimes if you deprive yourself of sleep, you're kind of... He says, and then it continued with Yom Tov, and then Chol HaMoed, and then he said, after Pesach. And he said, the Yisairis never left him. This was this was 40 years before. It never left him. He says, Hashem, he says, he had a chush. Hashem had given him a gift. Hashem had given him a gift because he pushed himself to do a mitzvah that he didn't have to do and that exhausted him. And Hashem rewarded him for it. That's mamash what the Gra is saying here. The Gra is saying, you do what you can do, then Hashem gives you rewards that are way beyond what you thought you might be able to accomplish. And that's the Gras Pshat of the Isha Maskelis. This is what the Baal HaTanya makes a very similar point. The Baal HaTanya talks about the fact. Again, I mentioned this last week, but it's good to talk about again. It's very, very interesting that the Baal HaTanya developed a Hasidus that is called Chabad. And Chabad is Chochma Bina Vadas. And the theory, the intellectual foundation of Chabad was that Hasidus should not be based on emotionalism. It should be based on thought. Because his argument was that the emotions are either connected to the Ruach or even the animal passions. And although even a person's animal soul can serve Hashem properly, right? But that's not the real connection to Hashem. The real connection to Hashem has to be at the higher levels of the soul. And that's why the Baal HaTanya would have been suspicious of things like Kal Brach Minyanim and the like. Because although there is a certain emotionalism that makes us feel close to Hashem, and that's the truth. That, we're not denying that. But that's a closeness to Hashem on a more animalistic level. It is not, this is at least what the Baal HaTanya says, it is not penetrating your deepest level. But the Baal HaTanya then says a surprising thing, which the Gra is saying the same thing. That is, that when you connect to Hashem on the deeper level, that will also trigger a joy. In other words, it's not like, oh, I connect to Hashem like a computer. In other words, my joy is an animal thing, but I got to connect, only with my mind. He says, no. When the deeper parts of the soul connect to Hashem, there is a deeper level of joy that is accessed as well, which is a joy of the neshama itself being mechaber to Hashem. And the Baal HaTanya says that that type of joy is not something you have to acquire. It is already within your neshama, but you need the keeping of Torah and mitzvahs and avodah in order to unlock what is already within you. And that is why tshuva, which we always say means returning to God, also means returning to yourself. You actually return to what is already within you. And it's interesting, the Gra says exactly the same thing. The Gra says, through the Shmira of Torah and mitzvahs, you come in contact with the Isha Maskelas, which is the beauty of your neshama. So it's interesting that although the Gra put the Baal HaTanya in Cheirim, not Baal HaTanya per se, but Chassidus in Cheirim, but in many ways they come out the same. In fact, it's interesting that Chassidus now is semi-popular in the yeshiva world, at least by name. Yeshiva Shalom, Sfas Emes, Rav Tzadok, these are Svarim that at least people give lip service to, even if they don't learn, but they say, oh, Rav Tzadok, Sfas Emes, a good thing. So I mentioned before that the one who brought these Svarim into the world of the Litvish Yeshivas was Rav Dessler. Rav Dessler was very, very instrumental. And Rav Dessler attempted, in fact, Rav Dessler has a very interesting thing. In the Mechtam Elio, he wants to show you that different styles of approaching Torah can actually be translated into a common language. He took like one thought and he showed you how Chassidus would express it, how Kabbalah would express it, how Musar would express it, how Lit, right, said that. And he shows you how it's the same idea, just to use different vocabulary, different terminology. So one of the things he wanted to do, I don't think this is the Mechtam Elio, he wanted to say, that the Shita of the Gra, of the Nefesh HaChaim, Chaim Balashan and the Gra, and the Baal HaTanya regarding Tzimtzum, this is a bit of an arcane controversy, is really the same. Now Tzimtzum means contraction. This was a concept of the Arizal, before the Gra, before the Baal Shem Tov. And Tzimtzum really starts off with a very almost childlike question. That is, if Hashem is everywhere, then how can I exist? How can I occupy? How can this occupy a space if Hashem is here? Hashem is Malei Kol Aretz Kavodo. How can anything exist if Hashem is here? So the Arizal says, well, it got to be. Again, the answer also seems, absurdly simple, but superficial level. It got to be that Hashem had to contract himself. If Hashem is here, but Hashem had to shrink and roll himself up into a ball, and that allows all these things to exist. Now, what does that mean exactly? But essentially what it means is, we're talking about Hester Panim. Hashem had to conceal the reality of his presence so that other things could exist, other things could have free will. That is why the Arizal says, by definition, Hashem's presence cannot be so apparent in the world, because otherwise there would be no free will, because if I would truly see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's glory, I could not make any decision against Hashem. So there is a machlokas between the Baal HaTanya and the Gra. And this seems like a very technical machlokas, but this was actually a major, major issue of Chassidus, and in which the Baal HaTanya says, Tzimtzum is not real. It is only an illusion. And in point of fact, there is godliness in everything. You can't say, you cannot say, Hashem withdrew and now we have this, or me. Because that would imply Hashem is not in me. But Hashem is in everything. So therefore, Tzimtzum, the Baal HaTanya says, is kaviyachol, as if, but not really. Yeah, I realize I'm just saying words without fully explaining them. I don't fully understand them, but I'm just to tell you what the machlokas is. The Gra, on the other hand, took the position that that is pantheistic. If you say God is in everything, then chas v'shalom, you turn into the idea of worshipping rocks and worshipping trees. So we have to say God creates everything, but God is not in everything. About it, God creates everything, but you cannot say Hashem is in everything. And therefore, the Gra took the position that the Baal HaTanya Shita of Tzimtzum was Ke'ein Avodah Zarah. Now, this may sound like a technical issue. There were many other more specific issues about Chassidus. They weren't keeping Zman Tefillah, whatever it is. But this was a major, major issue. So Rav Dessler tried to write that if you're Ma'ayin in the Baal HaTanya and you're Ma'ayin in the Nefesh HaChayim, he wanted to say that they're basically saying the same thing, that you could ve'emper, you could reconcile them, and you could bring them together. So Rav Dessler tried to reconcile the Chassidish view of Tzimtzum, the Nefesh HaChayim. So he got some big opposition. Lubavitcher Rebbe wrote him back and said, no, the Baal HaTanya, is the Baal a different shita, so that kind of. But Rav Dessler tried to reconcile. But one point at which the Baal HaTanya and the Gra are in absolute agreement is the idea that there is a hidden love and reverence for Hashem that is natua, is planted in the inner recesses of our soul. And through the Torah and the mitzvot, it gets opened up. So we don't have to acquire anything. The Ava and the Yira is within us. And we simply have to be able to know how to open ourselves up. And that is the meaning of Mei Hashem Isha Maskelis. But that is why the Baal HaTanya was the only, the Chabad was the only Chassidus that made it in Lithuania. It's very interesting. It's the most misnag. I'm not talking about Chabad today, that's a different story. But Chabad was the only Chassidus that was popular in a misnagay society. Because it was the least Chassidus of any Chassidus. You could say Chabad had a, again, I'm talking about the Baal HaTanya's version. Chabad had a mistrust of emotion. It put a tremendous, tremendous premium on learning Torah. And it basically said that the temporary rise that you get from excitement is, again, we're not disparaging it. It has a role, but it's just like, just like I eat food l'chavad Shabbos, so I'm using my animal hunger to serve Hashem, so I can also use my animal drive to serve Hashem too. That has a role, but that can't be the focus of your Avaida, because it is superficial, it is ephemeral, it passes, and it comes and it goes. It is only the simcha of the neshama that can be a more of a permanent type of simcha. And that simcha may be demonstrative, it may be quiet, it may not involve dancing on a table, although sometimes it might, but that's a deeper type of simcha and the like. And so as I say, this was essentially a Litvisha philosophy, this was a Misnage philosophy almost. So the Baal HaTanya was the closest. In fact, it's interesting, when Rav Shneur Zalman of Liade, that's the Baal HaTanya, was a young man, he was not a Chassid. Remember, in those generations, just like, the people who signed the Declaration of Independence were not born American citizens. There was no American. So people who were born in the earlier generations of Chassidus were not born Chassidim. There weren't any Chassidim yet. So the Baal HaTanya was not born a Chassid. So he was debating, where should he go to learn? He was debating, should he go to the Vilna Gaon, or should he go to the Mezuritcher Magid, the Baal Shem Tov's disciple? And he was debating. The Baal HaTanya almost became a Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. At the last minute, he made a decision. He said, because he had already known Shas and Paiskin before he said, well, Shas and Paiskin, I think I already know. He thinks that the Magid could teach him something, a new derech, whatever it is. But he was on the crossroads. He could have gone here. He could have gone there. So it is interesting that Chabad and the Gra have commonalities at the same time that they have very, very sharp, sharp differences.
If he would have got the Vilna Gaon today, there wouldn't be a lot of Kirov because Chabad.
You know, it's hard to know. You could write, you know, people like to write these hypothetical histories. What would happen if, you know, Hitler would have won the war? You know, what would so what would have happened if the Balotelli would have gone to the Vilna Gaon? It's an interesting question. What impact would that have had on Kirov and Chabad houses and everything else? Maybe we would have Vilna Gaon houses. I don't know. I don't know what it is. Okay, a professor that I know, a firm person, once told me that a law student once approached him after class and said, "Hey, you know, I know you're an Orthodox guy. Can you tell me? You know, they tell me I have a great, 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 great grandfather, a direct ancestor of my father. His name was Leo Kramer, and his town Vilna. They say he was a big rabbi. Actually, a direct relative of the Vilna Gaon, Rabbi Amish. You know, he didn't even realize. You know, here he was a rabbi, you know, but he didn't even realize what that meant. Okay, you know the story. I'll just tell you a little maisalach about this. We know that some people are learning the chelik of Mishnah Berurah dealing with the brachos that you make for Nisan, the whole siman there, different brachos that you make for events. So the halacha is that if a miracle happened to you and you walk by the place where the miracle happened to you, you make a bracha she'asa li neis b'makom hazeh, and you also make the bracha for a neis that happened to your father or a neis that happened to your Rebbe. So they say that in Vilna there was a certain bridge that when Rav Chaim Volozhin walked on the bridge, if it was, you know, every 30 days, he would make the bracha she'asa the Rebbe Neis B'Makom Hazeh. He said, what was the story? The story was that when the Vilna Gaon was like a baby, 6 months old, his mother was carrying him, walking on a bridge, and there was a big, powerful wind, and he was blown into the water. 6 month old baby. Somehow, I don't remember the story, somebody rescued him, or somebody got him, or whatever it is. So Rav Chaim Volozhiner said, if my Rebbe would have died, he says, my life would have been nothing. So the nace that happened to the baby that was saved is something I make a bracha for. So you have to be told to make the bracha for the nace that happened to the Vilna Gaon. Say again? I think it is brought down, he made it with Shem Malchus Mamish. That's how much he considered it. And the interesting thing is, you know, Rav Chaim Volozhiner was not a, people don't realize, the Vilna Gaon didn't have a yeshiva, first of all. So Rav Chaim Volozhiner started the first major yeshiva. Rav Chaim Volozhiner was not a Talmud of the Gra in any conventional sense. Rav Chaim Volozhiner didn't meet the Gra until he was in his 30s, and he already was Rav of a major city, Volozhin. He was a Rav. He already knew Shas and Shulchan Aruch. He did not get his basic chinuch from the Vilna Gaon. But he met the Gra when Rav Chaim Volozhiner was in his 30s. And he used to spend like a month a year to ask the girl all of his shilas. So it was only a month a year. He didn't, was not there all the time. And that's why they say, you know, the sefer, it's very, very important sefer. The Mishnah Berurah brings it, other people bring it. We have a sefer of the Minhagim of the Gra, and the Psukim of the Gra, besides the Perish on Shulchan Aruch, called the Maisa Rav. And the Maaser Rav, again, it was not written by the Gra, it was written by one of the Dayanim in Vilna, Rabbi Socher Ber, who was a Dayan on the base in Vilna, and sometimes contradicts the Gra in the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch, the Gra himself wrote. The Gra himself actually wrote the Ber on the Shulchan Aruch, although people added to it as well, but the chorus himself. All right, but be this as it may, sometimes there are stiras between the Maaser Rav and Rav Chaim Volozhiner's own recollection of what he saw the Vilna Gaon do, or what the Vilna Gaon told him. And the Svarim tell us that when there's a stira between the Maaser Rav and Rav Chaim Volozhiner, you follow the Maaser Rav. Because Rav Chaim Volozhiner was not necessarily the most reliable aid re'iyah, because he was not there all the time. So he saw something, but it could be the Gra was Machria, it was Chayzer, you know, there could be different things. That Rav Chaim Volozhiner did not see the Gra on a daily basis, and therefore did not always know exactly how the halacha played out in different circumstances. In fact, it's a big machlokas by Parsha Socher. Parsha Socher, you know, our minog is, when it says, Timcha es Zecher Amalek, you shall erase the remembrance of Amalek. So do you read it Zecher or Zecher? Zecher or Zecher? Now in the Chumash, in the standard Chumash, it says Zecher Amalek, but we have an extra reading. Now the basis of that extra reading is based on the Maaser Rav that says to read it with Zecher. And then the Mishnah Berurah says, L'chumra, therefore we read it both ways. That's where the minhag came. But that was not the minhag before the Mishnah Berurah, by the way. In other words, the Mishnah Berurah brought that minhag to be chayshish for the Maaser Rav, but Rav Chaim Volozhiner says it wasn't true. By the way, the Gra says the same thing in Ashrei, although I don't think anyone does it in Ashrei. Instead of Zecher Rav Tuvcha, according to the Maaser Rav, it's Zecher Rav Tuvcha. And by the way, the Gra didn't say do two readings. The Maaser Rav says only Zecher, which we're not going to do because the official Kri is Zecher. So this is one of many examples where Rav Chaim Volozhiner as Eidos is not considered to be the most reliable. So the Gra didn't have a yeshiva. One thing though, I know I'm digressing about this tonight, but one thing that in Vilna itself, the Gra was very concerned that Balabatim should have shiurim. So he got his talmidim, or people he was close to give shiurim to working people in Ein Yaakov, Agarata, Chayyadam, which is his own brother-in-law, Chayyadam, the basic halacha, and the like. And it is recorded that whenever he started a new group, he always gave the first shiur. So that's pretty neat. Imagine you show up, you know, you're a cobbler or whatever it is. You show up to Mincha one day, and after Mincha, you're going to hear an hour shiur from the Vilna Gaon and Yaakov, and you know, just Pashat Pshat, just because he wanted to impress on people the chashivas of the inyan. So he would always give the first shiur to the Balabatim and whatever the subject was, and then he turned it over to his talmidim to do and the like. So he was Isaac in that aspect as well. But be it as it may, that's the meaning of the pasuk Bayis V'Hayin. Is Nachalas Avais and the Hashem Isha Maskelas. If you skip a little bit down, just look at a very famous pasuk. The Gemara brings it in a few places. This is pasuk Yud Zayin. Again, I'm sorry for skipping around. Malva Hashem Chaynein Dal Ugmulo Yishalim Lay. Chaynein Dal, he who shows compassion and mercy to the poor. So you think you're giving tzedakah, but malva Hashem, you're really lending money to Hashem. Meaning to say, whatever money you have given away to other people, Hashem is going to give it back to you. Malva Hashem, chaynein dal, ugmulo, and your kindness, yishalim lo, will be paid back to you. Again, it seems redundant. The Gra points out, in every tzedakah, there are two aspects in what we do. There's the external act of giving money, if it's tzedakah, we're giving money. But then there is also the kindness and rachamim by which we give it. You can give money in different ways, right? The Rambam says, a famous passage of the Rambam, that there are many madregos of giving tzedakah. And if you look at the Rambam's madregos, he says, giving b'sever panim yafos, giving with kindness, ranks more than giving more money with less kindness. Because a person has to ask for money, you know, they're embarrassed, they're ashamed, they're humiliated. And if you could give them, you know, words of comfort, words of chizuk, that's a very, very big inyan. So the pasuk is emphasizing both aspects, the Gra says. In terms of the money you're giving, you are a malva Hashem, you're going to get it back. Don't feel bad about that. Whatever you're giving to tzedakah, you're going to get back, even in Eilam Hazeh, to some degree. Because we say aser b'shvil shetis asher, that meiser that you give will result in ashiris. In fact, Hashem apparently gives you interest, which is interesting. Because Baruch Hu normally has to keep the halacha, but apparently Hakadosh Baruch Hu gives you ribis. From stama, he has a heter iska of some sorts. But the gemulo is referring to the gemilos chesed of your tzedakah, not just the money, but the kindness that you show, the consideration that you show, the respect that you show. And that Hashem will also give you back, because that could even be a more important aspect. You know, and I remember, I mean, unfortunately, you know, when I was a rabbi in Silver Spring, so we had people collecting from Eretz Yisrael all the time. I mean, typically maybe 5, 6, 7 people a day collecting for chasanas and the like. And the truth of the matter is, when you have 7 people or 10 people sometimes, it is very hard to be nice to the 10th person. Even though it's not the 10th person's fault that there are 9 other people before him. You know, he's coming like they came. But you know, by the time you get to number 10, you know, you're impatient. So it's an isayin that a person has to be aimed on, not necessarily to hold them guilty for the fact that there are, you know, 9 other people who came before them. But I remember my parents, alayhi mashallah, you know, when they didn't have as many mashulachim coming, but when they had, you know, it was always a situation of, you know, offer them tea or coffee, a piece of cake, schmooze, you know, and there wasn't a lot of money that they could give, but the people who left always felt felt respected and well regarded, and that's a very, very important aspect of giving tzedakah. That again, I, Mr. Shem, when you have your own homes, that and people come to you, that would be something that you can remember, and that is the Malva Hashem Chai Nein Dal. That is not only the money that Hashem will pay you back, but it's Gemula Yishalem Lai. It is the Chesed that is even more important to give a person the dignity and respect. And the covet, like the Gemara says, somebody asked Rabbi Akiva, if Hashem loves the poor, why are they poor? The answer is to give us a chance to have a zechus. They're helping us. They tell the story of the what was it? By Achzakas Torah, they tell a similar story. You know, the Alger of Nevardik, Rabbi Yosef Yezel Harwitz, was a Talmud of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Very, very unusual person in many ways. Kind of an extreme person. For 2 years. He was literally a hermit. He locked himself in a house, and people had to give him food through the wall. But, you know, just because he wanted to work on himself for 2 years, people thought he was crazy. This was in Nevardit, and there were from Jews that said, "We're going to rip down that house," you know. But the Aruch HaShulchan was the Rav, and he said, "No, let him. He's a tzaddik." But anyway, after 2 years, he came out, and apparently, he got a lot of energy in those 2 years. He started 120 yeshivas, including many in the middle of Stalinist Russia. And the Vardikers, you know, nothing stopped them. They were fearless, no matter what. They like dared Stalin to take them out of commission. I mean, not openly. I mean, they took the precaution to take, but you know, they said they didn't care. They would be Marbit's Torah no matter what the Sakana. That was what Navardik taught them. The Stipler is an Vardiker. The Stipler, and then Ruchaim Kineski, but his father, the Stipler, was a Rosh Shiva in Navardik. He was a Talmud of the Alter of Navardik. And then, you know, so this kind of the kanos of the Kanyevsky family kind of comes from Nevardik and the work. Now, the Chazon Ish, Lemaisa, had disagreements with Nevardik in terms of Hashgacha, but it's interesting that he picked for his brother-in-law, a Nevardiker, the Rav Yaakov Yisrael Kanyevsky. So they tell the story about the Nevardiker like this. The Nevardiker once came to collect money for his many yeshivas, and he went to a rich man who was known to be a miser. And he got a lot of money out of him. So another Rosh Yeshiva went to him and said, "You know, I've gone to this guy for 20 years, you know, he always gives me a little bit of money. How do you get so much?" So the Alter of Nevardik said, "Ah, I'll tell you your problem. You come in, you see a rich guy, you see fancy carpets, you see upholstery. So you wipe your shoes and you clean off your coat and you know, you comb your hair. And you walk in and you communicate to the man that this is wealth. I respect this. I respect money. I admire people that have a lot of gashmias. You then turn around and say, 'Give me some of it.'" He says, "Well, no. You're asking a person to give up something that you yourself consider so precious. Nobody wants to give up something that's precious." He says, "I come in. I track mud, I track mud into his house, you know. I put my feet on his, I put my dirty shoes on his sofa. You know, I give him the impression, your stuff is worthless. You have nothing here. Money, furniture, houses, garnish, worthless. But I have a proposition. I can make this worth something if you give it up for Achzakas Torah. So the Alter Rebbe Vardik said, I'm not asking the person to give me something. I'm doing him a favor. So that he's going to do. Sure, can you do me a favor? I'll give you the money. So he said that for Achzakas Torah, you don't ask people to give something. You offer them an opportunity to make something useful out of their money and out of their wealth. So that people will answer. People will respond to it. People don't want to give up something precious. You're showing me how precious my money is, then you're asking me to give it to you. But if I communicate your money is nothing, again, I'm not sure, I have Dr. Schiller, I'm not sure if this works for real fundraising or not. But this is a story they tell. And the idea was that, therefore, essentially, what one should communicate to a nani, if one is on the Madrega, is that you're grateful for the opportunity to use your money for something worthwhile and something good. And that's part of the chesed you show a nani, that, as the Gemara says, that the ani is helping me be zaycha to olam haba by doing something useful. And certainly by achzakas Torah, it's that way as well. In fact, they have a similar story with Rabbi Chanan, but it's not as dramatic. Where Rabbi Chanan was coming to somebody's house, a gevir, during dinner, and Rabbi Chanan used the back door, and the gevir was very upset with Rabbi Chanan. He said, "No, I want you to go into the front door. I want my children to see that you're not a beggar. This is a chashuv thing. This is a good thing. This is an important thing." And he told Rabbi Chanan, you shouldn't make it sound like, you know, it's an apologetic, I think. This is the most important thing I can do with my money. And therefore, my children should see in the middle of dinner, whatever it is, the front door, Rosh Yeshiva comes. And, you know, that's how it is. Okay, yeah.
Doesn't
it
say that we're
supposed
to honor rich people?
Well, it says, Rebbe used to honor rich people. That's what it says. Rebbe was Mechabed Ashira. But even so, you know, it depends. It depends what that means. Either it means you honor rich people because they give tzedakah and they're worthy of honor, or you honor rich people because you have to assume if Hashem gave them wealth, there's some zechus either they have or their parents have, and the like. Yeah. So Lamaisa, again, I'm not mentioning the Alter of the Vardik's behavior if it was even true as a halacha Lamaisa. And again, I don't think even in terms of Chayshin Mishpat. I don't think he tracked mud into somebody's house. I think he was just expressing the attitude that I don't come in with a sense of awe. In fact, they tell a story about talking about Chayshin Mishpat again. They tell a story about the Gra, and Rav Chaim Kineski said it cannot be true because it would be a violation of halacha. The story they tell about the Gra is that a person came to the Gra for a bracha while the Gra was in the middle of a Shabbos susu, and the person was wearing a litvish strimel. See, strimels were not only worn by Hasidim, they were, Litvish wore strimels as well. Rabbi Yashuv had a strimel.
It's like a gear type of strimel?
Huh?
It's like a gear type of strimel?
Yeah, a gear type of strimel, yeah. They're different types. But non Hasidim wore strimels as well. In fact, the reason why Yerushalmis wear is because Talmidei Hagra wore strimels. So the story goes that the Gra was eating cholent. Again, Rav Chaim said it can't be a true story. He says the Gra was eating cholent, and there was like cholent on his fingers, and he put his fingers on the strimel and gave the person a bracha for Arichas Yomim, and there were stains on the hat, and the person never cleaned the strimel for the rest of his life because he wanted to have the footprint, the fingerprints of the Gra on his strimel. And he says that this was a segula for him, that his family had brachas and brachas and brachas, because he had the fingerprints of the Vilna Gaon on the drum. So Rav Chaim Kineski said, he felt this story is absolutely not true. Number one, he says, the Vilna Gaon would never chas v'shalom be mazik somebody by getting his clothes deliberately. Number two, he says, he can't imagine what Derech of the Gra would be. There would be cholent on his fingers. Like, you know, that wouldn't be the Derech anyway. Yeah.
For Pesach, a person would have to sell the strimel because they're
chametim. You're right. Yeah, it would be a problem. You're right. But okay. So that's the thing. So the point is, I'm saying the Alter Mevardik is the same thing. I don't think Alter Mevardik would make a cheshbon that would allow him to trample mud into somebody's house. But still, you know, in terms of communicating, your wealth is nothing until you use it for something good. That's a very, very important lesson. Okay. Going weiter, next to Psukim, the Gra has also a very interesting comment. Yaser bincha ki yesh tikva. Yaser bincha, discipline your son, for there is still hope. V'el hamiso al tisa nafshecha, and don't lift your soul to hamiso. Now the word hamiso is a very, very interesting word because the translation is not certain. Hamiso can either mean his death, killing, or it could mean his moaning, like hamiyat. It depends actually. A hamiyah is to moan or to groan. So let's go over the two pshatim. Yasser bincha ki yesh tikva. Discipline your son, because by giving him discipline, there is hope he will become better. And don't pay attention to his crying. Even if he's arguing with you and he's saying, don't do this. Now again, the Vilna Gaon says, Yasser does not mean take an iron bar and beat him. But it means a person has to have discipline, a person has to have direction in life. So even if they don't like it, don't pay attention to his crying or his complaining. In the long run, it's going to be good. So essentially, according to this interpretation, this is a pasuk that is expressing a tough love philosophy. Meaning, you got to be strict and tough with your child, even if the child doesn't like it. Because if you give in to whatever the child wants, ultimately you are hurting the child. Right? And this is something that has been expressed a number of other times, especially in the famous pasuk, Chasoch Shifto Sonei Beno, he who spares the rod hates his child, etc. But the Gra then gives a second pshat, which is very, very interesting. And that is, instead of talking about how tough you have to be, it's actually expressing the times when you're not supposed to discipline your child. He says, discipline your child when there is hope. Instead of saying, always discipline your child because then there'll be hope, he'll become better, it's actually giving you a limitation. Discipline your child only if it is done in a way that is likely to have the hope that he'll become better. But if it will kill him, hamiso, then don't do it. Now, we don't mean kill him necessarily physically, that's obvious. But it means that sometimes discipline can kill a person's spirits, can make a person despondent, can make a person feel that they're not understood. So the Vilna Gaon basically says, discipline your child in a way that gives him hope that he can become better. But discipline that will destroy his spirit, do not pursue. You're going too much. They say, B'Shem Rav Aaron Cutler, that Rav Aaron Cutler, you know, Rav Aaron Cutler was, people don't realize, he was already a gadol, big gadol in Europe when he was 20, in his 20s. He was already a Rosh Hashiva at 22. There were certainly avreichim that were older than him, and even unmarried people who were older than him. But, you know, he married Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer's daughter. He became the Rosh Hashiva in Kletsk, and he was already considered to be a great, I'm not going to say he was a gadol ador then. He was not. He was young, but people understood that he would be one of the great Gedolei Hador. I think I've mentioned before that he once had a tremendous desire to visit the Ragatchover Gain. The Ragatchover Gain was the co-rav of Dvinsk together with the Or Sameach. But very different personalities. The Or Sameach was the Misnaged Rav, and the Ragatchover Gain was the Chassidish Rav. He was actually a Chabad. The Ragatchover was a Chabad. And the Or Sameach was a very, very kind, gentle nature. And the Ragatchover was also a great tzaddik, but he was very stormy and fiery. And you wouldn't want to get into a discussion with him. So The Stargaz Rav Aaron wanted to speak in learning with the Rebbe Chover, but he was afraid to come as a Rosh Yeshiva because the Rebbe Chover cut down all Rosh Yeshivas immediately. So he came as a working man. He said he's a person, he tries to learn every day, but he, you know, he has a store, etc. So they speak in learning for half an hour, and the Rebbe Chover gave him the supreme compliment. He says, "For a balabas, you're really not bad." Of course, they tell another story about a rav of a big city came to the Rebbe Chover, and they spoke in learning for a while, and the Rebbe Chover was very, very nice to him. So the person said afterwards, he says, "I don't know what people say about the rav. They say the rav is so tough on Talmidei Chachamim." So the Rebbe Chover said, "Yeah, you're right. That's exactly right." But Rav Aaron Cutler, you know, was Rashid of Kletz. What happened was, he was under his father-in-law, Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer. And Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer came to Eretz Yisrael. He came to Eretz Yisrael in the 1920s, very, very, very early. And that's when Rav Aaron became the head Rosh Yeshiva of Kletz. And for more than 10 years, and then came the Holocaust, and Rav Aaron came to America, and for several years he did not start yeshiva. He was only Isaac and trying to get people out of the Holocaust sakana. But eventually he started a yeshiva. He started Lakewood, and Lakewood today is very big, but Lakewood in Rav Aaron's time was very small. And Rav Aaron spends much of his week collecting money. Now Lakewood is a very professional office. In fact, it's interesting that the chief executive officer of Beis Medrash Gavoa, his name is also Aaron Cutler. He's Rav Aaron's great grandson, he's a day safer, but he's a businessman. He's like a full time fancy office. But in those, so the rest of yeshiva don't have to do that much collecting of money anymore. But in Rav Aaron's time, Rav Aaron like did everything himself, and people didn't understand then the idea of a kailel. They understood, you know, rabbinical schools to produce rabbis, but Rav Aaron was an ish emes. Rav Aaron, if people said to Rav Aaron, "Oh, what's the purpose of your school?" So people told Rav Aaron, "You should say it's to produce rabbis who will head synagogues." And that people understood. He said, "No, the purpose is that people should learn. Learn for what? Why?" They didn't understand. What do you mean learning? I mean, you learn for a degree, you learn for a job. Good, even if the job is to be a rabbi, so you learn to be a rabbi. Rav Aaron refused to say that. He said, "No, we don't learn to be rabbis. There'll be rabbis, it'll produce rabbis, but we learn because learning is learning, learning. Torah l'shma." So he was getting like very, very, you know, little money here, little money there. And he often had to go into places, such a great gadol. There was no tznius even. In fact, they say one time, this broke him down. Like he was getting, you know, he collected money, he never complained. One time, he broke down crying because he was in Miami and in a hotel seeing some rich guy who gave him $5 or something. And in the elevator, women come in who are, you know, dressed going to the beach. That broke him. That already, he started crying. So Talmud said to him, he said, "Rebbe, I don't understand." He says, "You're such a marbid Torah, you're a tzaddik. Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu put you through all of these sufferings? Why do you have to go through it?" So listen to what he says. Nogeya this parsha. He says, you know, we read in this parsha, Yer Miklat, that if you kill somebody b'shaygeg, you have to go into galus. Galus, that's called the punishment. So he says, every Rebbe that's Marbitz Torah may have killed the soul of one of his Talmidim by the way he spoke to him, by the harshness. It's a shaygeg. The Rebbe didn't intend to kill anybody. But an offhand remark, the way you respond to a question, the way you talk to somebody. Rav Aaron said, "We're Reitzchim." So Rosh Yeshiva has to go into Golus, like the Yer Miklat, you go into exile as a kapara for the Ritzicha B'Shogeg that occurs in the context of teaching. I mean, listen, it's a very serious cheshbon. I mean, I guess you guys could imagine it on the receiving end sometimes, but you know, yeah. And I remember it on the receiving end too, you know, both ways. So this is what the Gra is saying, a very beautiful, powerful thought. Discipline your child, but do it in a way that gives him hope. The El Hamisai, but if you're going to kill him, even spiritually, Al Tisa Nafshecha, do not lift up your soul to do it. Then don't. Let it go. And the next pasuk makes the point. Gadol Chema, if you're filled with anger, Niso Onesh, you carry the punishment. Don't punish your child. In other words, it's kind of a break. If you're so filled with anger that the only way you can discipline him is that way, then don't do that. Do not do that. Kiim Tatsil. Because if you save your child from that humiliation, Vio Tosif, you will be able to add on his aliyah. Very, very important clause. So instead of simply saying tough love, got to have discipline, the discipline itself has to be loving and supportive. And if it's a discipline that will crush a person's spirit and kill him, then let it go. You carry the punishment on your shoulders instead of giving it to him. You know, I remember hearing from the Bassner Rebbe, Zichrono Livracha. This is the father of the present Bassner Rebbe. Very, very fine, very, very fine man, Rav Levi Yitzchak Horowitz. When I lived in Boston, me and 100 other people. I wasn't a private guest, but I was there many, many Shabbases. In fact, my wife and I still argue over this. I'm not sure. In one of the Chanuch Teller wrote a book of vignettes, little stories about the Bussner Rebbe. It's called The Bussner. I don't know if you've ever seen it. So there is a few pictures. And I think there's a Havdalah ceremony there, Motzei Shabbos. And they have a line of people. And I think I'm actually in the picture. For some reason, I'm the only one looking at the camera. I don't know why. I think it was me. Although I don't want to tell you because the suits that we wore in the 70s, I cannot believe it. But okay. But be it as it may, the Bussner Rebbe used to tell this story that his father, who was the first Bussner Rebbe, I used to think Bussner was maybe a city. What's a Bussner Rebbe? How do you get a Bussner Rebbe? I thought Bussner was maybe the Ukraine had a city called Boston or something. No. But Boston means Boston, Massachusetts. And indeed, his father, Rav Levi Yitzchak's father, Pinchas David, came to America after World War I. And there were a lot of Hasidim who belonged to big groups like Ger and Bells and Vavav, but they didn't have. They wanted like a local Hasidish Rebbe. So Bussner was really a Shita Mekubetzes for people who had, you know, were parts of bigger groups, but there weren't any groups in America. So they gravitated. And when Pinchas David died, his oldest son moved to New York, and that became the Bussner Rebbe of New York. And Rav Levi Yitzchak stayed in Boston. That's the Bussner Rebbe of Boston. And there's still a son of Rav Levi Yitzchak in Boston. And then there's Rav Meir, who is the Bussner Rebbe of Har Nof. So it's all Bussner Rebbe. So the Bussner Rebbe, Rav Levi Yitzchak, used to say that his father would hit him, you know, physical discipline. But whenever he did something that his father wanted to hit him, his father would always wait 24 hours before hitting him. What's the pshat? Because the father didn't want to hit his son because he was upset. If I hit my child, or even if I yell at my child because I'm angry, and I'm doing it to get my anger out, on some level, it's a strict thing to say, it is a form of child abuse. You're simply using your child to get out your frustrations. Rather, there certainly is a heter to discipline a child, and even a chiv. A heter to hit a child if you do it in the right way. And the Gra himself says, very gentle, and Revolva says, we shouldn't hit children at all today. Revolva said, it's but that cannot. But whatever it is. But you have to do it only because it is for the tayelis of the child. If it is not for the tayelis of the child, then hitting a child is like hitting an adult. Yelling at a child is like yelling at an adult. If I can't yell at you because you did something I don't like, what gives me the right to yell at my child? Child's not my property. But if after thinking about it, and I'm no longer angry, I realize this is what my child needs, so then I do it in a cool, calm, collected way. So he says his father always waited 24 hours. And that's what the pasuk is saying. if you're filled with fury, hold on to that punishment. Don't release it then. Kiyim tatzil. Because if you can save your son from that expression of anger, v'yod tosif, you will be able to add on to his holiness and ruchnias. Now, I have to say, in the interest of full disclosure, that I have heard from some psychologists that they disagree with the waiting 24 hours, because they say that young kids particularly don't have a memory of what they did. So if like Monday afternoon in the middle of nowhere, I get pow, you know, and what's that for? He says, don't you remember? You know, so they say that it's better to have the punishment closer, but yeah, it's not necessarily a stira. So if it's not going to be, okay, that maisa was 24 hours. If it's not 24 hours, let it be 30 seconds, meaning you don't do it in the heat of a moment. You calm down, you collect yourselves, and then you determine what is the best way for me to deal with this situation. The yisoid is very, very important. Children are not punching bags, either physically nor emotionally. We do what we must do for chinuch and for hadracha, but it should never be because we're personally upset. Yeah.
Going against
the Mishle
is against the Gemara, against
the
divorce as a person. If he
doesn't
punish his child, he hates his child. The
Mishle
says a person has.
Well, this is also Mishle. This is Mishle too. The answer is you punish your child when you do so without anger. That's right. You have to take everything into account.
If the derech for more than 1,000 years was to punish a child, all of a sudden because.
I know what you're saying. All of a sudden, I didn't write this today, this afternoon. I mean, this is Vilna Gaon. This is telling me something that's hundreds of years old, and it's expressing a Torah teaching. Besides the fact that generations do change, I mean, that's true. That's what Rav Olva said about hitting. He said that in earlier generations, hitting was considered to be a method of hadracha if it was not too harsh. Bismanazai says it doesn't work. In other words, if you live in a society where kids have less respect, you have to deal with them in a more gentle way. But listen, there's no question that children are damaged by parents that are behaving in rage. There's no question. A person is no hedger to behave in anger. I'm not saying that we're all nichshel in it, but you can certainly discipline your child, you can punish your child, and you can be very tough in disciplining your child. But the discipline has to be an expression of love. It cannot come from anger. Anger is rejection. Love says, I'm doing it because this is the best thing for you. A beautiful story of this, Rav Schwab recounts. You know Rav Schwab, a very, very interesting person, Zichrono Livracha. He grew up in Germany, and he grew up in what was called a from family, Torah im Derech Eretz. This was based on Rav Shimshon Fal Hirsch, in which the religious Jews in Germany very much believed in secular education, in college, getting doctorates, unlike the Litvisha Torah world that basically said, no secular education. So he grew up in a Torah im Derech Eretz, but he was sent to learn in the Mir Yeshiva, which was pretty rare, a German Torah im Derech Eretz person being exposed to the Torah-only world of the great Litvisha yeshivas. And as a result, he became a bit of a convert, although he was living in both sides. He actually wrote a very early book when he came to America called Elu V'Elu, Divrei Elokim Chaim, in which he tries to summarize the arguments on both sides. And he became the Rav of really the survivor of Rav Hirsch's Kehila. Rav Hirsch's Kehila was in Frankfurt, and it was destroyed in the Holocaust, and it reconstituted itself in Washington Heights. So what is called the Breuer's Kehila, because Rav Breuer was the first Rav after the Holocaust, is Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch's Kehila, called Kahal Adas Yeshurin. And Rav Schwab was Rav Breuer's assistant, and then he became the Rav, and he's been Nifter already more than 20 years. He has a lot of Sfarim in English, Hebrew, on Tefillah, and Chumash, and the like. But he tells the story that his father was a real, real old Hirshian, meaning he was Torah Derech Eretz, but very, very, it's not like modern Orthodox. It was very, very strict in halacha, very, very medayik in halacha. It wasn't a modernism that was kal in any way. So he says two things about his father. He says his father, during the Pesach Seder, would talk about the four sons and say things that are very tough. He would say, do you think I love you? He says, yes, yes, Abba loves us. He says, who do I love more, you or Hashem? He says, I love Hashem more. And if any of you are going to be a Rasha, he says, you'll have to leave the house because I love Hashem more. He would say, I love you, but I love Hashem more. He says, all right, so it sounds like pretty tough statement. But then he said that the minhag of his parents were that if, they would eat jam and bread every morning for breakfast. So the day that a child misbehaved, they wouldn't get jam. They'd only get bread. But when the child didn't get the jam, the parents didn't have the jam either. And Rosh Rav says that hurt the kids much more to see that Abba and Ima didn't have a good breakfast that day. Because the parents wanted the kids to know, we're not here to hurt you. But when you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, it hurts us. We have a lot of pain. And therefore, you don't have, but we don't have, because we're not like, making you to be worse than us. And he said that was a very, very powerful lesson of Imo Anochi Betzara, to suffer with your children, to understand and to communicate that this is love. We're not punishing you, because we're also punishing ourselves. We just want you to learn to be a better person. Right? This is a Yiddish chinuch. This is chinuch. This is this makes differences in people, and that's what the pasuk is telling me here. And that is, if you can't punish except in anger, then don't punish. He says, don't. Right? No say onesh, which is interpreted to mean you the parent or the Rebbe, you carry the punishment. Okay, maybe we'll stop here. Anyway, I wish you all, we're entering the, technically it's not Shavua Shechalboy because Tisha B'Av is in Nitzchah this year, but we are in the 9 days, and we hope that this should be a Zman of Gola. There's still a good chance that we're not going to fast next Saturday night, next Motzei Shabbos. Bezus Hashem, we should be Zeichu to the Binyan HaMikdash, but if Chas V'Shalom not, then L'chol HaPachas, this should be the last Tisha B'Av of Avelis, and as the Pasuk says, these days of fasting should be L'Sasing L'Simcha. Thank you. Okay, take care.
Okay, awesome. Deborah, all these moving rabbis.